Chapter 13. The interstate through Iowa stayed flat and ruler straight for mile after mile. Traffic was light but consistent. Allegedly, 1 million Americans were on the move at any one time, night and day, and clearly Iowa was getting its share of that million, but a minority share, probably proportional to its population. Reacher held the Chevy a little under 80, just rolling along through the empty vastness, relaxed, at ease, surfing on the subdued growl of the motor and the rush of the air and the whine of the tires, sometimes overtaking, sometimes being overtaken, always counting off each mile and each minute in his head, always picturing the Greyhound Depot in Chicago in his mind. He had been there before, many times, on West Harrison, on the near south side, a decent place full of heavy diesel clatter and constant departures. Or maybe he could try a train from Union Station. He had once ridden the train 18 hours from Chicago to New York. It had been a pleasant trip, and there were bound to be routes that continued onward to D.C., which was pretty close to where he ultimately wanted to be. He drove on, fingers and toes. Then, all over again, brake lights flared red up ahead like a solid wall, and in the distance beyond them, there were flashing blue and red lights from a big bunch of cop cars. Beside him, Alan King groaned in disgust and closed his eyes. Karen Del Fuenzo had no audible reaction. Don McQueen slumbered on. Reacher lifted off the gas and the car slowed. He got over into the right-hand lane well ahead of the jockeying. He braked hard and came to a stop behind a white Dodge pickup truck. Its big blank tailgate loomed up like a cliff. It had a bumper sticker that read, "Don't like my driving? Call 1-800-BITE-ME." Reacher looked in the mirror and saw a semi-truck ease to a stop behind him. He could feel the beat of its idling engine. Alongside him, the middle lane slowed and then jammed solid. Beyond it, and a second later, the left-hand lane jammed up in turn. The Chevy's lights against the Dodge's white tailgate threw brightness backward into the car. Alan King turned his face away from it towards his window and tucked his chin down into his shoulder. Reacher heard Don McQueen cough and snore and move. He looked in the mirror again and saw the guy had thrown his forearm up over his eyes. Karen Del Fuenzo was still wide awake and upright. Her face was drawn and pale. Her eyes were on his in the mirror. And she was blinking. She was blinking rapidly and deliberately, over and over again. And then she was jerking her head sideways, sometimes left, sometimes right. And then she was starting up with the blinking again, sometimes once or twice or three times or more, once 9 times, and once as many as 13 straight flutters of her eyelids. Reacher stared in surprise. Then the semi-truck sounded its horn long and loud, and Reacher glanced forward again to find the Dodge had moved on. He touched the gas and crept after it. Evidently, the Iowa cops had arranged the obstacle the same way the Nebraska cops had. Everyone was cramming over into the right-hand lane. A mess, potentially, except that the cops had officers out and about on foot with red-shrouded flashlights. They were regulating the maneuvers. And some kind of Midwestern goodwill or common sense was in play. There was plenty of after-you-neighbor stuff going on. Reacher figured the delay might amount to 10 minutes. That was all. No big deal. He glanced in the mirror. Karen Del Fuenzo started blinking again. Sorensen replayed the critical quarter-hour window 2 more times, once backward and once forward, both at high speed. As before, she saw the Mazda arrive, and as before, she then saw nothing at all until the random traffic blew by on the two-lane 15 minutes later, the pickup truck heading south and the sedan heading north. Gamble.
"South still makes no sense?"
she asked. "No sense at all," Goodman said.
"Are you sure?"
"There's nothing there."
"Bet your pension?"
"And my house."
"Shirt off your back?"
"My firstborn grandchild, if you like."
"Okay," Sorensen said. "They went north. And you know what? We saw them do it."
Where?
Right here,
Sorensen said, and she froze the picture on the random traffic, as the northbound sedan passed in front of the southbound pickup truck. She said,
That's them, in the sedan. Has to be. It's the only vehicle going north. They spent 15 minutes doing something else, and then they got back on the road by looping around south of the lounge, not north of it. It's the only logical explanation.
15 minutes doing what?
I don't know.
15 minutes is a long time to delay a getaway for no reason.
Then obviously there was a reason.
The kid behind the register said,
I heard a car alarm at about 20 past midnight.
Sorensen stared at him. She said,
And you didn't think to mention that before?
Why would I? You didn't ask me. You didn't explain yourselves. You still haven't. And I only just remembered anyway.
20 past midnight?
About.
Definitely a car alarm.
No question. Pretty loud, too. The highlight of my night so far, until you guys showed up.
Where was it?
The kid waved his hand.
Over there, he said. Could have been behind Missy Smith's lounge for sure.
Okay,
Sorensen said.
Thank you.
Goodman asked her, So what are we saying? They spent 15 minutes stealing a getaway car?
Maybe they did, and maybe they didn't. But whatever, a car alarm going off is another good reason why the waitress might have stuck her head out the back. She would have been worried about her own car, if nothing else. We have to find her right now. It's time to go bang on some doors.
Goodman checked his watch. We better hurry, he said. Those guys will be hitting the roadblocks about now. You should have put them 100 miles out, not 80. Sorensen didn't reply.